When describing the various ways of developing mindfulness or establishing mindfulness, the Buddha talks about being focused on the body in and of itself, internally or externally or both. And the same with feelings, mind, mental qualities. You can focus on them either internally or externally. Internally, it's pretty obvious what he's talking about, but what about externally? If you believe that mindfulness means simply being aware, how are you going to watch other people's feelings or mind states? But when you realize that mindfulness means keeping something in mind, this is a very useful instruction. It helps you compare what you've got with what other people have. And there are lots of different ways you can benefit from this kind of contemplation. For instance, with the body. You reflect that your body's made out of the four properties. And it's the same with other people's bodies. I remember when I was young, I used to think I had a special relationship to my body. We were on good terms. I took care of it, and I thought it would be nice to me in return. And as you get older, you realize that your body is there not because it wants to be, or it's happy to be there. It's just, after all, it's made out of the food that you ate. You took it over. And when it's going to do its body thing, it's just going to do its body thing, no matter how well you care for it, no matter how wonderful the food, or how good your exercise program. The body's going to age. It's going to grow ill. It's going to die, just like everybody else's. This helps give you a realistic check on your relationship to your body, what you can expect out of it. But it also helps you reflect that if you think about where you would like to be reborn, it's going to be another body. And it's going to have the same problems that this one does. So this kind of reflection is a good equalizer, but it's also a good inducement to sangvega. No matter how good things get, say you decide you want to be a bodhisattva, well, you have to come back and be born again and again and again, and you have to eat, and you have to find clothing, and you have to find shelter, all of which places a burden on other people. So it gets you thinking. Maybe the best thing would be to go to a formless realm. Okay, well, the formless realms, if you get there, it's very difficult to do any kind of contemplation. And so you've got to come back to the form realm again. The best thing is to get out. And as for your body image, it's good to equalize it, that reflection on the 32 parts of the body. Think of what you've got, and the Buddha always advises that you start with your own body first, and then you think about other people's bodies. The same 32 parts, and more. And you ask, which one of them would you like to put up here on the altar? Which one would you like to see on a plate? Which one would you like to, if it's liquids, which ones would you like to bathe in? Well, none of them. Everybody else is the same. If you have an especially high regard for how you look, well, think about what's inside. If you have a low regard for how you look, and we have a lot of that in our culture because of the unrealistic body images that we see in the media, it's good to realize that all those beautiful bodies, if all you have to do is just take off the skin, and you wouldn't be able to look at them at all. So it's a good equalizer. I was talking to some Dharma magazine editors the other day, and I'm talking about, if you have a low body image or a negative body image, this kind of analysis can actually be really good for you. It reminds you that everybody else has just the same parts that you have. And they had never heard of that idea before. It tells you a lot about American Dharma. It's a reflection on bodies inside and out. It's meant to be an equalizer and to give you a sense of sangvega. Not to say that the body's bad. It's just that it's not the sort of thing you want if you're looking for something beautiful, but it is something you want to look for if you want to look for a tool to practice with. Because after all, when you're sitting in meditation, who's doing the sitting? What's doing the sitting? It's the body. When you walk, do walking meditation, you've got to use your body. To listen to the Dharma, you need the ears. So you realize the best use for this body is to practice the Dharma. And for whatever you want to aspire to in another lifetime, you want a body that's able to practice the Dharma. That's the body. As for feelings, you reflect on the fact that you have pleasure and pain, neither pleasure nor pain, and you love pleasure and you hate pain. But as you reflect on the fact that other people have the same pleasures and pains, on the one hand, that's meant to develop a sense of compassion, a sense of goodwill. You realize that if your happiness depends on their suffering, they're not going to stand for it. And you can't say, well, this is my suffering, so this is my happiness, and so it's special. Well, they'll say, well, this is my suffering, and it's special too. I don't want it. Then again, you realize that wherever you could be reborn, there's going to be pleasure, there's going to be pain. There are heavens where it's exclusively pleasant, but then when you leave those heavens, you come back down to pain again, and sometimes it's really hard. I've told you about some of Ajahn Furang's students who were extremely difficult people. Nothing was ever good enough for them. And his comment was that they were devas in a previous lifetime. They haven't adjusted to the fact that they're human beings again. So being a deva and having all that pleasure is no guarantee that it's going to last forever. And sometimes it makes it harder to come back. So again, you can take this reflection as motivation to practice really seriously. See if you can go beyond that. As for mind states, it's the same sort of reflection. On the one hand, it's an equalizer. Whatever you're experiencing in your mind, other people are experiencing the same sorts of things. And what they're experiencing, you've experienced before. There's that passage where the Buddha talks about seeing people who are extremely wealthy and realizing, okay, you've been there before. Seeing people extremely poor and ill, you've been there before as well. Helps to equalize things. At the same time, you can think about people who are faced with the same mental problems that you have. In other words, the mind when it's depressed, the mind when it's scattered. All the great meditators of the past and the present have had just exactly this same kind of problem, and yet they were able to get past it. In the same way that when you're sitting with pain, you realize that other people have sat with pain, but they were able to sit with it. What did they have that you don't have? They had persistence. Where did they get that from? It wasn't that they were born with it, they developed it. You can develop it too. This way, the reflection on other people's minds can lift you up. When you hear about people sitting long hours in meditation, say, why can't I try that too? And you run into pain and you have to realize, well, they ran into the same pain. What did they do? They must have done something. The fact that there is someone there who sets an example that opens your mind to possibilities that you wouldn't have thought of before. As the Buddha said, without him as our admirable friend, we wouldn't have thought of the path. But the fact that he's there as an example opens our minds to the possibilities that maybe we can follow that path as well. Reflection on other people's mind states is also a good reflection for fairness. We all have a tendency, we like to straighten other people out. We want this person to be that way and that person to be this way. But then you reflect on, well, when other people try to straighten you out, how do you feel? The Thais call this making the other person's heart your heart and making your heart their heart. In other words, realizing that what you feel is what other people feel. If you're going to straighten anything out, well, you've got your heart here that needs straightening out. And so focus on that, because this is where you really can do the work. Because this is where all this reflection on bodies and feelings and mind states outside has to come back, has to come back to what you're doing with your body and your feelings and your mind states, because that's what you're responsible for. But by casting your mind out in that wide net, you get some perspective on what you're doing right here. And if you do it skillfully, it can really be an aid in the practice. So don't neglect this part of the meditation. Because it really can help your motivation, it can help you develop the right attitudes, and help you think of possibilities you might not have thought of before.